So this is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural Wild Mountain West, among other places, in the occupied states of America. And we're broadcasting here. We're all sitting in the same room in Intergalactic Prairie Studio, and it's great. Hi, guys. How you doing? I like that shirt, Phil. Looks good.
Well, hey, Michael.
I wore it for you, man.
You wore it for me? Cool. So, yeah. We got some stuff. We got some announcements. Let's see. There's an orange car parked in the driveway of Intergalactic Prairie Studios. Mm-hmm. It will be towed if it's not removed in the next 15 minutes. Let's see. People who try to contact you after you've blocked them are stalkers. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. That lady. All right. Lady. There's a new coin out, a new cryptocurrency. It's called Kratom. Not Kratom coins, just Kratom, like the herb. I don't know what that is, but all the kids are doing it apparently. So Kratom, the website for this herb, the website for this coin, this cryptocurrency, if people in countries where that's legal want to mine it, is Kratom. Let me look it up. It's kratom.pw, I think. That's a weird domain. It's Palau or something, somewhere in the
PW.
Indonesia.
I'll think on
something
that
like
one.
That. Yeah, let's see. It's Kratom. Kratom.pw, like POW without the O. Kratom.pw. That's like Phil Warmoth. Kratom, period, Phil Warmoth. Yeah, he doesn't know what that is either, but you know, I'm using the post NATO alphabet. P will be Phil, right. And W will be Warmoth. After the state, the state will never go away, but it'll be so small. It'll be theorized about by particle physicists. And it'll be kind of like MySpace, you know, 500 million users, but no one's logged in 8 years. Let's see. What else we got? Let's see. Cops are cowards because they won't go into school to stop a shooting. Yeah, I think that's it. So we got some topics, and you guys might get to actually talk more than me. I'll just play some gentle piano in the background because I'm testing my new sustain pedal. Phil and I play music together. Little outfit, little rock and roll outfit. Called Bip.
Little gear.
little bip. It's called Bip Tunia. That's Bravo India Papa Tunia. It's like Petunia with a B, I think. I don't know, something like that. Bip Tunia.
Google Bip Tunia the whole band?
Or yeah. It's me and whoever's in it. It's my cat, actually. Bip Cat, who's named after the Bip Cat No Government License, which does cover this show and somehow covers this coin called Kratom. I don't know how that happened, but a lot of people use the Bipcot No Government License. That's good. And So, no, that's
kind of cool because since government can't use Kratom, right. You couldn't pay your taxes in Kratom.
And, you know, there's actually one country that's allowing payments in any cryptocurrencies now. And ironically, it's Venezuela, the country where people are starving to death and beating. Did you guys see that video of, like, a crowd going into a field and beating a cow to death, like with their shoes and rocks, and then cutting it open and eating it. And they're eating zoo animals. Yeah, they're starving because the government's just, you know, it's like one of those blockade. It's like North Korea, but worse, kind of, because people are starving and they're rationing and they're blaming it all on America. It's got very little to do with America. And the government just wants to. The president is just a madman. I mean, that country is sitting on the world's largest petroleum reserves. That country has more oil than Saudi Arabia, and everyone's starving to death. That's government, man. That's weird. But
it is.
Aren't
they calling their cryptocurrency the Petro?
The Petro, yeah, which is funny because the oil. Yeah, their coin's called their Fed coin, their state coin is called... Yeah, the Petro, and it's worthless. It's backed by the same thing their money's backed by, which is faith in the Venezuelan government. And they're having hyperinflation, like, you know, where people are burning. Well, they're not burning money to stay heat like they did in Germany because it's warm in Venezuela. But they're, you know, it's one of those things where you go to have a meal and they don't write down the price of the food because there's no food. But second of all, because it's going to be like 20% more expensive by the time you finish the meal. It's that kind of thing. But yeah,
I wonder what the pre-mine was on the Petro.
They just pre-mined all of it. But yeah, they're inviting people to mine it. Like they're giving people a license to mine that. But anybody who mines any other cryptocurrencies that aren't state controlled, like, goes to prison. Yet they're allowing, like, tourists to come, as if a tourist would go there. I guess you could go there right now. You could probably buy like a whole family for a couple dollars. But yeah, man. it's a sorry state. But they're arresting people for crypto. They're making their own crypto, and they're encouraging people to spend crypto there. And they'll probably, I would imagine, if people who live there like pay their taxes in crypto, then they'll probably take it, then arrest them. They want cryptos because they want non-Fedcoin cryptos that are actually worth something, I think.
I think the reason they have to arrest people for crypto, particularly I think it's crypto mining, is because the one thing that is about free in Venezuela is electricity, and mining got real popular until they figured it out.
Ah, yep, yep. Phil's like, what are you guys talking about, man? I don't know.
It's all right. I'm just soaking it in.
It's all words.
Well, Phil, I understood. Phil's thinking that, so is everyone else.
Phil understood the word Venezuela, right? I'm not saying Phil's dumb. And Phil just doesn't, he's not on this bandwagon that all the kids are.
At least he knows Spanish, see.
Yeah. Do you know Spanish? You speak Spanish, Phil? You want to do the show in Spanish?
Un poco. Yeah.
Un poco.
Enough to get me in trouble when I was in Mexico.
Anarca un poco. Yeah.
Nata Vista. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I live on the corner of Trash View and Nata Vista. You know what that means, Phil?
Yeah. No view.
No view. That's from the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers. You guys remember that comic?
Of course.
Yeah, that was where they lived. The Freak Brothers lived in a city that looked like San Francisco, but wasn't really called that. And they lived on the corner of Trash View and Nata Vista. Trash View and No View. Yeah.
Nice.
So in one direction, you see trash. In the other, you see nothing. You see a wall. A wall.
That's
man. The wall. Build a wall and make Venezuela pay for it. Build a crypto wall. So what's new, man? What's new, guys?
Well, tell you, it's been a long, short week for me. I just got over this nasty cold that I know you had.
Yeah, you caught it from me over the internet. It's one of those internet viruses, I think.
Yeah, man. But no, I'm feeling better now. It's just I was worried I wasn't going to have a voice today, but I do.
That's okay.
So we're good. Yeah,
it's okay. Good. Randy can do a whole show himself, and I just can go, yeah, man. But Phil, we're going to ask Phil some things because Phil's. I'm thinking of Lou. Nah, man.
Yeah.
Nah. So Phil is a school teacher, right? And Randy.
Cool. 18 years.
Yep. And Randy is a retired. He used to be a prosecutor. Boo. And then he was an attorney. Yay. And now he's a retired attorney. Double yay. How's your retirement?
Double, yes.
How's
definitely
your retirement
double.
Going, man? You're doing more shows. I know that.
It's really great. I don't know what to say. I mean, I just enjoy
everyone
it. Now, I'm not
it.
Completely retired. I'm just doing different stuff. Like I'm expanding and revising my libertarian book, which I'll talk about later after it comes out.
God is
out.
Free?
But,
no. Free is beautiful.
No, not. Free is beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
God
it.
Is free.
And I'm working on that. So that takes up some time and visiting, you know, my kids and stuff more often. It's very
you got grandkids?
Enjoyable. Hey. I do have a couple, yes.
Oh.
And I got a son getting married in April, so who knows, maybe there'll be some more after that. You know, grandkids are, I mean, I had four kids, but
they're
I'm
easy.
Looking forward.
Grandkids are just
are
fun
easy,
without the hassle.
Easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. You know, I really enjoy that because then, you know, you go, you visit, then you come home and go, oh, I'm beat. But
yeah,
it's good.
And you get to like buy them a bunch of sugar and get them all amped up and then drop them off back with their parents.
Yeah, that's kind of fun because you go and you feed them the stuff and
that they want
son,
and you're cool.
Their father is watching and he's trying to hold his tongue, you know.
Feed them all the stuff parents don't want them to have. I don't have any.
Exactly.
I don't have any kids. I had a kid, but she passed away. My wife has kids that are adults, and one of them has. Like a kid that's three, like adopted kid that's 3 and 15. And then he's got the girl, the woman has a baby that's like 5 months old or something. So, and it's fun because we came to the
conclusion. Oh, you're going to get into that.
Here's a trick. Here's a life tip. So, you know, if you're still buying like birthday presents and stuff for kids when they're 30, you know, kids. Once they have kids, DJ came up with this brilliant deal. No longer buying presents for her kids, we're buying presents for their kids. So it's like,
yeah,
you know,
that's cool.
Yeah, you don't have to go like, ugh, we're still buying presents for people that are like, you know, old enough to be almost grandparents in Venezuela. And in one of those poo hole countries, as the president says. But, that was just, man, what a time to be alive. So yeah, man, buy stop buying presents for the adult kids and buy presents for their kids and go wild. Buy their, yeah, like, you know, like the teenager is getting, like, you know, synthesizers for me and stuff, like hand-me-down computer equipment after I realized that hardware synthesizers are just a hassle and it's all about software. Phil knows. Phil doesn't know. He just gets cool music in the mail and talks
about
it.
I get it.
Yeah, you get it. When I was your age, our synthesizers, we had to carry them, and they were heavy. They weren't on our laptops, and they went out of tune, and they cost tens of thousands of dollars. Yeah.
True.
Yep. So, what's in the news? So, the school shooting. I guess we should talk about that. So, there was a school shooting. Turns out the school safety officer was outside, didn't go in. Like, the guy who's hired to be there with the gun and stop the bad guy was a freaking coward and sat outside. And then like, immediately, like, before the shooting was over, four sheriff's deputies showed up and stood outside. So the people that a lot of people think are the only people that should carry a gun did nothing. And I think they should be fired, stripped of their pensions, and, you know, made to stand naked in the public square and throw tomatoes at them or something. But what do you guys think of that?
It sounds like an argument. Phil's going to have an opinion on this, I'm sure. Although I was going to be a school teacher, I came to a crossroads in my life where I had to decide whether I was going to be a manager at a pizza parlor or go to teach chemistry and biology, and I took the pizza parlor.
You know, Ben Stone managed a pizza parlor at one time.
Did he?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Some town in California, Bakersfield, I think, or no, it's the place we're on the radio that's exactly between LA and Vegas. Barstow. Yeah, he managed a pizza parlor there. Oh, I have an announcement. In case people haven't noticed, when you're hearing this, we're no longer live on the radio. Everything's pre-taped, and we're no longer live at night at all. We're only on 2 days a week, and it's weekend days, Saturday and Sunday days, because we were on like one station at night, and we're on like, I don't know, 18 stations on the weekend. And our network decided it wasn't worth paying somebody to board op in the middle of the night, you know, for one station. So because of their, I think it's a smart decision, and I like it. I like being on the radio, but it was too much making shows for every day of the week. And it was, you know, we can't afford to just stay doing like podcasts more than 2 days a week because money. We don't make much money. So send us money. We do have one advertiser, though. You can go to the Freedom Fiend site, freedomfiends.com. And really, like, this show, like, it's for the 7 years it's been together, I'm still in the hole. Like, I've lost money because I bought a lot of people equipment. I'm paying $400 a year for streaming feeds, one for the Freedom Fiends random streaming feed, and one with there's an app for that. I have to update the Fiends app too, because it has like the live times on it and stuff. But there's another streaming feed. It's Cuss Free Liberty, which the Freedom Fiends are on. It's a streaming thing I run, and there's an app for that on the Android store. Cuss Free Liberty is the name.
Who else is on that besides the Fiends?
I could tell you. Hang on a sec. Good question.
Ben Stone.
Ben Stone, Tom Woods. There's a bunch of people. Yes. There's a bunch of stuff that's archives that aren't making shows anymore. Like, let's see. Okay, here's the show. The archive shows that I'm playing forever are Mises Institute audio articles. They make a few here and there. Some of those are Diana, Freedom Fiends, Diana reading them too. Bad Quaker, Ben Stone's thing. A couple shows that had a little cussing but were so good I went through like 5 or 10 episodes and removed the cussing. So edited episodes of Dangerous History Podcast with Professor CJ, who is a college professor and knows more about history and the real history, not what they teach you in most government school. Right. And then libertarians.
You mean he's forgotten more than we'll ever.
He's forgotten the stuff that's wrong. Yeah. And then the edited episodes of Libertarians on Fire. William Grigg, G-R-I-G-G, who died last year, rest in peace. Freedom Zealot, which is an amazing show. The Complete Liberty Podcast and Libertarian Tradition with Jeff Riggenbach. Scott Horton has a few shows on there, but I stopped putting them on when he started cussing again. He told me he wasn't cussing and then started cussing. And I mean, I don't mind if he cusses, but, you know, if you're gonna cuss and then you're on a cuss, I put you on a cuss free Liberty Network. Yeah, so I'm only putting shows on now that never cuss, and they told me, like, we never cuss. I don't mind cussing, but I want this to be a resource for people that, A, want to play it on community radio. We're on a bunch of community radio stations around the country. They just play the Cuss Free Liberty 24-hour feed 24 hours a day. And then also to bring people to Liberty who, and ideas of free market economics, for people who don't like cussing, because a lot of libertarians, you know, rightly believe that, yeah, liberty means freedom to do a lot of things as long as they don't harm anyone. And that includes cussing on your own property, which is your podcast. But a lot of people don't want to listen to that, and they don't want their kids to listen to it. So this is good for homeschooling, too. Right. So it also has, these are the ones that update weekly. I play live new shows, let's see, Friday through Tuesday, and then Wednesday and Thursday I play repeats of older stuff. So it's, let's see, Ron Paul's podcast, Free Talk Lives Digest, Tom Wood Show, Mises Weekend with Jeff Deist or Deist, Jason Stapleton Show, Neo Cash Radio, which is a cryptocurrency only show, Who Will Build the Roads podcast, The Inner Tube Show, Freedom Fiends, this show, Digest, Anarcho Agenda, and Contra Krugman, and the Free Coast podcast. And Anarcho Agenda is put together by Riley Blake, the guy who does the digest editing for the Freedom Fiends. So it's cussfreeliberty.org, or just Google Cuss Free Liberty and it'll be the first thing that comes up. So yeah, man, people, humans, we love them. So topic. So yeah, people, the cops were there and didn't go in, man. And the cops say, you know, a lot of people think only the cops should have guns. I've heard that time and time again. I used to think that when I was a kid, even though I didn't trust cops. I thought only the government should have guns. And I don't think that now. And yeah, man. So the guys that hold the guns that are supposed to be the last line of defense between a madman and our most precious resource, the children, didn't go in. What do you guys think of that?
Well, you know, the fellow who cowered outside while half the kids were being shot inside, that fellow, he's pushed back now and got an attorney, and
he's got a liar.
That
he was a lawyer.
He was a hero because he's now saying that he thought the shooting was going on outside, so he was actually outdoors confronting the danger. And there's not a problem. And of course, the thing with the Sheriff Israel, was that his name?
He's
the one who came on TV and was so disgusted by this guy. And then it came out that three more of his guys stood around outside and that when the local police department, which is a different agency, the city police department, shows up, they ran in past all these sheriff's deputies who were standing around outside.
Wow. And the sheriff's deputies saw him do that and didn't follow, too. Didn't go in as backup.
Yeah, I don't think they went in at all. That's pretty amazing.
Nope.
You know, this is one of the things, the coward problem. I don't know how you get around that. Now, if teachers had guns, since they're already stuck inside, even the coward might do something with his concealed carry if he was actually about to be killed.
Like
the teacher that threw himself in front of some kids and died himself.
Yeah.
He didn't have to die, or at least he could have not gone down without a fight, but he went down without a fight because he had no choice.
Ugh.
I thought it was interesting that one of the strategies a teacher suggested was for the students to hold their textbooks up in front of their faces.
That just makes it easier, because then, I mean, an AR-15 bullet's going to go through any textbook and still be lethal at that range. Sure, but it's hard sometimes for people to shoot somebody if they can see their face. Covering the face just dehumanizes them and makes them into a target. It makes them easier. Yeah. Great advice.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm going to hold my textbook at center mass and just go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. As many times as I've been through shelter in place drills over 18 years at the particular school that I'm going to talk about in a minute, where there was another, this time a foiled attempt at a school shooting. Yeah. I taught at the school for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, and we had numerous bomb threats. Bomb threats were actually pretty common.
Don't kids do that to get out of tests?
Well, it's a very indirect, impersonal kind of threat. You can do it from a phone, you know. But
different burner phone. While, not get caught.
It became so common that we wouldn't even evacuate anymore. And I happen to have a classroom on the third floor, which was the most remote floor of the school. To give you an idea, there were only about 600 kids in the school at the time.
Oh, that's small.
my classroom was right around the corner from one of the bathrooms, and I'd walk in there frequently just to check and see what was going on and
see who's smoking and can you have some? In the boys' room,
there was actually a Bob threat. Yeah, B-O-B threat.
A Bob threat? That's what I thought you said. I heard that and was going to make a joke, but I'm like, this is serious stuff. He couldn't have possibly said Bob threat. I was going to say, what, they let my cat Bob in there? What's going on, man?
Right, no, I couldn't make that up. And me being an English teacher, that really upset me.
Bob threat.
One of my,
no kidding. Yeah. It was like Woody Allen in the movie with the bank robber who had the note that said, I have a gub.
I remember that. That's funny. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, man. But I have to say, going through all that stuff, that I felt we were pretty prepared. I felt that the school did a good job. I felt the teachers were doing their best. But when it comes down to it, if someone really is determined, they're going to do what this guy did. And I think we have to take a look at some things that need to be put into place that,
like, aren't letting teachers carry guns, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. Some teachers that I know, I wouldn't want them to have guns, to be honest with you.
Well, another problem with that too is that say they make that legal, and they're, you know, in Wyoming, 90% of teachers, 20% of them are probably packing illegally already in school just because they want to protect the kids and they don't want to be without a gun. But, you know, I think 90% of them plus would probably start packing if they could. But in states where guns are bad, the teacher that likes guns might not volunteer to carry the gun because the other teachers would ridicule him, pass him up for promotions, get him, the school board might get him fired at the first chance they could. You know, because there's so much hating guns is a religion. It really is. And like the altar.
I know, but how do you.
The altar is dead children and they dance on that altar. It's really grim. But anti-gunners like get moist when kids die. It's really sick to me, man. They get excited.
Well, that is. But how are you if you are in a theater, all right, and you don't have your concealed carry, you left it at home, all right? And some guy comes in with his long gun and looks like he's about to start shooting people. Are you hoping that there's some concealed carry people with their weapon in there or not? Now, I am.
Of course.
Well, maybe those teachers who would normally never do it might actually appreciate you having it.
The thing is, too, though, a lot of times the media really distorts and cherry picks the facts of a situation to serve their agenda, from straight up lying down to like not showing all the facts to in the middle somewhere, like they did with Jeremy, of showing the footage of, you know, the person coming on his property and saying, I'd like a statement. And then the next scene is him pulling a knife and saying, here's my statement, get the F off my property. And they edited it out. They edited out the two times she pushed and said, come on, give me a statement. And he's like, really? Get off my property. You're trespassing. Come on, give me a statement. Get off my property. You're trespassing. So they, you know, they edited it selectively. And that happens a lot. And there are a lot of people with guns who stop shootings, and it doesn't make the news, even the local news sometimes. It doesn't fit the agenda, man. And I think that if a teacher stopped a shooting with a gun and, you know, killed or injured the bad guy to where he couldn't shoot any more kids, they'd only call him a hero if there was no way around it. You know, like, they would probably, in a lot of states, the teacher would be arrested for carrying a gun to school. In a lot of states, if you shoot somebody legally in your home, this happens in California a lot, they arrest you anyway, you go to jail, you get a lawyer, and then you have to wait and bail out, put your house up for bail, and then prove your innocence. Whereas in a place like Wyoming or Idaho, you know, you probably aren't going to spend...
Or Missouri.
Yeah, or Missouri. You know, if someone's in your home, it's obviously someone you don't know, you know, it's someone who's known to the police as someone who breaks into houses or something, and you shoot them, you're probably not going to spend the night in jail. You know, you and the DA is probably not going to prosecute, especially if it's an election year. And in California, he might prosecute, especially if it's an election year. And in California, if you shoot somebody, this would be a problem in a school in California, like stopping a school shooting in states like California and Connecticut and New Jersey and New York. If the teacher shot the person and stopped the aggression, they might not go to jail, but they could be sued by the scumbag's family. And that happens in California. Like, people break into people's houses, you know, with weapons, willing to kill people to burglarize them in the middle of the night. Homeowner wakes up, shoots them. They don't get it. You know, they worry for a year that they're going to get prosecuted. Finally, the prosecutor says they're not going to prosecute it. And then the scumbag's family sues them. In Wyoming and some other states, maybe Randy knows about Missouri, you cannot sue someone civilly in a shoot that is considered, you know, justifiable homicide. Is that how Missouri is?
You know, I'm not sure about a civil liability. There is some laws attached to that. I'm mainly familiar with the criminal side, what you could be charged with a crime for, and that sort of thing. I've never been that proficient in the civil side of the law. I managed to avoid it for my entire career.
It's complicated.
Well, yeah.
Not saying you took the easy thing out, but you didn't tend to do long, protracted cases, did you?
Well, it depends. Murder cases would tend to run out, you know, more than a year almost always.
Oh, you did murder cases. Okay. I thought you did mostly drunk driving and petty theft and stuff.
No, as a prosecutor,
you did murders.
Right. Yeah. You know, you start out doing the traffic tickets, then the DWIs, and then after you've been at it for 10 years, they're just doing the heavy duty stuff, mainly because the new people don't know how.
Yeah.
But when I was in private practice for the last 10 years, yeah, you don't get the heavy duty one so much as you usually get people that have enough money that they can hire a private attorney. And so the guy who robs the bank or the drug dealer, he doesn't have anything most of the time.
Yeah. Right.
But the guy who goes to work every day, has a family and a job and gets a DWI, he's hiring you all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it's
so
kind of like how, you know, I saw a meme about that too, about the school shooting too. It was, you know, school shooting, and it showed like a picture of those cops sitting outside, you know, it said school shooting, cops stay outside, you know, someone has marijuana, and it shows cops kicking in a door in SWAT gear, you know, like they go after the easy stuff. They go after the easy target, and they often don't go after the gangbangers with marijuana because they'll shoot back. They go after, you know, the hippies with marijuana, basically. Yep. And people that just aren't, like, you know, violently criminal minded. I mean, there are, you know, some, but not all of them, not a lot of them. And, yeah, man.
Even if they are criminally minded, they wouldn't be if it was legal.
Yeah.
You know, almost all of the violence associated with drugs come directly from prohibition and nothing else.
Yep. What's that, Phil?
Yeah, I was just going to say I have kind of a interesting perspective on that because I work at the jail. I tutor and prep inmates take the HISET, which is the new version of the GED in some states. And especially in Maine, the amount of drug-related offenses here, I would say it's probably 75% of the whole total local jail, at least, population.
Is that in Missouri too, Randy?
That's in Maine.
Randy?
Well, it's that's a lot.
Everywhere?
But it's more half of, in the whole country together, half of people in jail are in there for victimless crimes. But it's higher in other places, like federal. In federal prisons, it's higher than that. I did federal cases for the whole time I was in private practice, and I never once represented anybody who had hurt anybody else.
Wow.
Because they're all in there. Almost all of them are either weapons offenses. When I say a weapon, I don't mean using a weapon. I mean possessing one.
Yeah.
Weapons offenses and drug offenses, and the other stuff is just a smattering here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, Phil, go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, like the people that I work with are generally from out of state, Usually they're drug mules, and they're just cut loose in the wind. You know, no one's going to try to help them out. And they're looking at federal time, most of them. Most of the people that I work with are early 20s at best. It's a tough road for them. And then lately in Maine, they're shutting down the local jails. And basically the state of Maine is going to be paying for places like Massachusetts to be warehousing the prisoners here that they
nice
can't
catch.
Deal with.
You said we, I mean the state of Maine.
We're training you.
We're getting you.
Yeah.
That language is important though. You know, when people say we, like, oh, you know, like, oh, we need to pull our troops back in Syria. Well, yes, they need to be pulled back, but they're not our troops. And, you know, a lot of people in society have this collectivist attitude where, you know, it comes from a like way back in public schools, like at the turn of the century, like punishing the whole class for something one kid did. That's how people feel about society. And they train you to say things like that, to use that language. And it's so effortless to so many people, like, you know.
Now, I don't think Phil is guilty, though. Normally, when you talk about what you do overseas and what did we do to Iraq and that, good, we doesn't belong. But when it comes to paying, I still use we.
We pay for this. I agree. But it's really good to get away from that. And I like that Phil did that. It was subtle.
You made me conscious of that. Yeah.
So do they still do that in school? Punish the whole class, or is that unconstitutional now? It should be.
I think it's a crapshoot. I think every class has a different culture, and I think that's part of the problem, because I can't imagine going through seven periods a day with seven sets of different rules and expectations. and you know, to me, that blows my mind. And
what do you mean by seven? What are the seven?
Seven periods of the
day.
Seven different,
And that's
rotations.
How it is with kids, right? They go through seven different...
Some schools.
That's difficult because, I mean, it's... There's no consistency to where, like, something that's totally fine in one class isn't in the next, to where you'd have to, like, click over in your brain software to a new set of controls and rules. And that in and of itself is maddening. And, you know, it's interesting, this thing about punishing the whole class, which was really big when we were kids. Do you remember that, Phil?
Oh, yeah.
That was common in the 70s in public high school, a public grade school, I mean. And that is considered a war crime with prisoners of war. With prisoners of war, you know, if one of them tries to escape and they punish the rest of them, that is literally a war crime under the Geneva Convention. So teachers are committing a mild war crime under the Geneva Convention when they do that.
I agree with you. So the way to avoid that is to create classroom norms and involve the students in having them create the expectations. And by doing that, you get buy-in, and you can always go back and revisit it. So one of the first things I do when I'm faced with a new class is we sit and we hammer out these norms, and the norms are on the wall, and people put their initials on them, and people, whenever... If there is an issue, we go right back to the norm again and say, hey, look, what's breaking down here? What needs to change? Having a conversation.
The attempt of that national thing that Obama put in? I forget what it's called. Common Core? What do you think of that? Do you have that?
Well, because I teach adults, we have an adult version of that.
Yeah.
And I think the idea behind it was really good, is to raise the standards.
Yeah, and standardizing nationally. But
here's the thing. When they start telling you how to teach, that's where I have an issue. So I don't have an issue if you tell me that students need to be able to understand what a primary source document is. That I don't have a problem with.
Yeah.
It's just when they start giving me primary source documents, like selectively giving me primary source documents to talk about. You know, tell me what I need to do and let me figure out how to do it. Because as you know, people learn in different ways. And I had a class of what we called an alternative population who, when we really started to look at it, this was a idea of one of our former superintendents to actually take a look and see, out of a population of 600 kids, which are the ones that have absolutely no services that are falling through the cracks. So it was a pretty exhaustive effort, I remember we had a spreadsheet that was like took up two table links. We came up, I'm not even kidding you, and we looked at things like attendance and grades and all that, but then we started to dig deeper. And out of that population of 600, we found 80 that were at risk and had no services available to them. So created this
at risk program. You mean outside of school?
No, inside and outside of school. At risk for failure, at risk for behavioral issues, all kinds of things. And it really kind of opened my mind. I didn't realize that. So anyway, to make a long story short, we created this program. It was really successful. Went on for 5 years. Started out with 4 teachers. I was the last. It ended up only being me. And one day toward the end of the school year, my principal comes into the room. And this is getting at the Common Core idea. She said, well, I'm sorry, but there's not going to be any more program for these kids next year. Everyone needs to get the same thing the same way. And in my mind, I had already quit after that. I was so disgusted with that whole idea that I waited till the end of the year, put in my resignation, and I was walking away from the whole teaching profession forever. I was done with it. I was so disgusted by that. I left all my stuff, everything. I just walked away. Then I went back to the mental health field, became a mobile crisis worker, and I ended up seeing the same type of thing going on out there. It was amazing to me, but it was happening in the realm of the healthcare field and the mental health care field breaking down. Like all these systems were just breaking down in front of me. So it's no wonder that you see this kind of thing happening and you see the breakdown in the response to it.
I mean, not to criticize what you do, but you're kind of a good peg in a weird hole of public school. I mean, I can't picture something as centrally planned and with so many other problems going back 100 years as public school of not having problems and kind of feeling like not that you should give up, but that or that they should give up, but that just some things are just not going to work in a system where everything is centrally planned. And I mean, the whole model, I think, is broken of having people show up at the same place at the same time and sit in tiny rows and memorize things. And I know that there's, you know, little things are a little cooler than that in some classes, but that is a model that goes back to about more than 100 years that is made to train obedient soldiers and competent factory workers, you know, and that's not how things work now. I mean, and kids still can't show up on time. Like I deal with a lot of people that are younger than me because I'm 53 and I'm cool. So most of my friends are, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s. But I mean, I'm astonished. I mean, there's a lot of people that are good hosts that are good freedom fiends just because they couldn't show up on time and do something as simple as like, I mean, you say you're not computer literate, Phil. You say you. I mean, not that you're not computer literate, but you know, you basically do a serviceable amount of computer work, and you're like, I don't know what that is when I tell you about something new. But I taught you FiendPhone, told you what microphone to get. Right. You got it. I mean, you got on today with no problem. You weren't like half the time Freedom Fiends were like, I don't know what's wrong, you know, and they'd be calling me like during a show saying I can't get on. So, and not just Freedom Fiends, but you know, and I'm not talking mostly about people that people remember. I'm talking about people that weren't on for very long and people don't remember more than anything.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
Everything. Like, people really have a lot of time problems showing up. There's a book. Randy, have you seen the book called Police Proof Yourself?
I don't think I have.
It's a really interesting book that I recommend for anybody, not just people, you know, involved in anything criminal. But it's a book written by Oh, it's arrest proof yourself, is it, David? It's written by a defense attorney who's a former prosecutor and a guy who was the, you know, that's the expert in it. And then the guy who's kind of the writer who knew how to write was a, from the same city, Miami, was a the editor of a big newspaper there. Or no, write, like did the police beat of the newspaper there. So he saw, you know, everything the police could do and could write. And then it's, you know, all the facts mostly come from a prosecutor who's now an attorney, who was also a cop. So he was all three. Huh. The basic premise of the book is that police try to arrest people, not only try to arrest people who aren't doing any harm to society, but they prefer that. Like, they absolutely prefer, you know, to arrest someone smoking pot who's sitting there peacefully on their porch, not bothering anybody. They prefer that than arresting some drunk who's beating people up on the street corner because, you know, the drunk is going to fight back. The drunk is going to throw up in their police car and pee himself or poo himself. And, you know, it's just easier. They go for what's easier. They go for what gives them arrests. And he said that even if you're one of these people who are like, I'm a law abiding citizen, I obey all laws, I pay my taxes, I always have my license, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, they arrest those people too when they can. Not all cops, but a lot do, because it's easy. And he basically said that the premise of this book is if the cops can't see you, they can't arrest you. You know, so he says like basic things like, don't have your car looking crappy. Don't have it dirty on the inside. When you get pulled over, if they see, you know, a bunch of McDonald's things in the back of the seat, they're going to look a little harder. Have your plates up to date. Have your registration up to date. Have your license up to date. You know.
So it's sort of a the Chris Rock how not to get your behind beat.
Yeah, yeah.
Without swearing.
Yeah. Or he has a thing about like what to do if you're a black guy who's in a car with a white guy when you get pulled over by the police is his other thing. But, you know, so the basic premise is like staying out of the maw of the state is not being seen. And what he has like five chapters in this book, like a third of this book are on showing up and how hard, like he said that a lot of people he defended, they're in prison because of something that stemmed, you know, a chain of events that stemmed from them not showing up for something because they don't know how to show up. He's like, most of these people that he defended don't have a permanent address. They, you know, crash, quote unquote, with different people, or they, you know, stay somewhere, work a job for a while, lose the job and move to another town. They don't have an alarm clock. They don't have a lot of life experience of getting up to an alarm clock. They don't know how much time you have to, you know, like if your court appearance is at 9 a.m., they think you can get up at 8:30 and, oh, it's a half hour drive. No, you have to get up,
shower, they don't have gas for
brush
their
your
tank.
Hair. They don't have gas for their car. Yeah, like all these things that a lot of people don't have life skills who went through public school, right, who graduated. Mm-hmm. Question for each of you. First, Randy, what's your experience with that kind of thing as an attorney and prosecutor? And then Phil, like, what's your experience with that as a teacher and what can be done to change it? So, Randy.
Right.
Okay, well, for our private clients, the ones that were paying me money, they show up because these are people.
They have jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have jobs and it's their money and they want to get this over with, it to be out.
And they know how to show up because they have a job.
Yeah. They know how to show up. Now, the appointments that I got, the federal cases, which were all extremely serious cases, these people, it was almost a relief. I hate to say this. It was almost a relief when they were in jail. Most of my big drug dealers.
You could go visit them. You could go find them.
I could find them anytime I wanted, and they had all the time in the world to talk with me. I mean, they were glad to see me. They were bored. So I really enjoyed that. The ones that were out, I would say two-thirds of them were very difficult to deal with because everything you just said, the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know, they're not trained to do that. They've never got any kind of responsibility and habits, and so they don't show up. And that's how it goes.
Yep. So hang on a sec. Roland. Okay. Phil, what do you experience that? Do you know, have you dealt with people that have graduated high school that don't know how to show up?
Oh, absolutely. And in my experience, when they're in high school, they don't know how to show up. So part of what I do now is I work with adults trying to get their HISET or GED diploma
in jail,
but also in jail and out of jail.
Oh.
And also with students who actually can earn a high school credential through the state of Maine by attending adult ed. So what we've found over the years, and this comes up at every adult ed conference that I've ever been to, the biggest issue is attendance, right? So people have gotten really creative with their attendance policies, but none of it ever has seemed to work. So last year, the program that I'm involved with took a really good look at what worked and what didn't work, and we said, let's just try something completely different. So we create kind of a la carte program where, depending on your level of commitment, you show up 2 days a week, you show up once every month. But the whole idea of it is to put the responsibility back on the student. We're there for support. We're there to guide them. But really what it boils down to is their level of commitment. And there's nothing short of, being a policeman in that sense of the word that a teacher can do if the student isn't committed to getting their education. So what's happened is all the roles have been reversed now. And it's funny because the students who would be that extra 5 minutes late, they'd be close to being on time, but it'd always be that 5 minutes too late. Now they get there early and they apologize. Or they'll apologize because they have to leave because of an appointment. So it's totally turned everything around. And it basically what it's done for the instructors is it gives you the ability to become more of a facilitator and not like a micromanager. So if you want to come in to school, let's say you got 4 hours and you're working on four different classes. What if you don't feel like doing math today? That's totally cool. Work on your English. There's so many options, and I think that's one of the things that students don't get enough of in public school. And you're right, the structure doesn't allow for that, because what does that really do? That gives students control.
And that's so true.
I'm afraid it's true.
I mean, that makes
such
good sense. And not only that, but it's really true that people need to have choices. I mean,
absolutely.
Michael, you've got half a dozen irons in the fire all the time.
I've got choices. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And me too, and so do I. And when I am working on a book, and I'm writing, and then I'm just getting sick of it. I'm so tired of writing. I just set it down and I go and spend 2 weeks reading.
Nice.
And researching and doing some other. And if you got things you can move around, sometimes you can stay productive if you'll quit what you're doing and do something else. And kids don't have that option all the time.
It's not being modeled for them. They don't have experience with it. So I think that's where the big failure comes. And I'm a big, we can get back to this school shooting thing. The only reason I want to talk about it is because, like, where do we learn this stuff if we don't learn it at home? We don't learn it at school.
Spankings. Starts
where's
with spankings,
character?
I think.
Well, I'm talking about character education.
Oh.
fulfilling your promises and being there on time and all those skills that we need to negotiate the world, I just don't think they're getting it.
I got it from private school, which is I went to public school and was kind of a problem after my parents got divorced and I was basically fatherless and had no male role model. So when I was like 11, I was hanging out with guys that were like 17 and 18 because they were cool and I was smart. And, they'd like let me smoke a little pot and they'd be like, talk some science, Einstein. And I would. And they'd be like, dude, yeah, just groove on it. And, I was really smart and I'd hang out with them and they had pot and they'd hang out with me back when I did that. So it was a symbiotic relationship. But they were, like all car thieves and stuff on the way to doing. There are a lot of them are in prison now. Actually, one of them was in jail a bunch, got out, and now, ironically, like the only class he did well in was metal shop, and so now he has a business that does really well, welding small cages for jails to put nonviolent offenders in. Like holding cells that are one person standing up, like
a little irony
Abu Ghraib kind of cages. Yeah,
wow,
yeah, it's evil. That's
They call that time out at RJ.
Yeah, yeah. So then I went to, I got, my mother couldn't handle me. She was having a breakdown from divorce. And she sent me off to the Church Farm School, which Phil and I have a song that addresses now called Church Farm Schooled, which will be on our next Biptunia record, which is going to be called, what is it? Something shoot out the Fantasy Factory? No, that's Traffic. What is it, Phil?
It's a Short Circuit at the Sheep Factory.
Short Circuit at the Sheep Factory. I will give a plosive there because, you know, in the song I say at the sheep. I say it twice, like accentuating the P. That's because it sounds like the sheet factory without the P being enunciated. So, yeah. Oh, I wanted to take a little break here and give a shout out to Cell 411, which is a great app that I don't know if it'll help you show up on time, but it'll help you stay out of jail, maybe. And it also, basically, you can set up cells of your friends and with one button, call them instead of the police or, you know, them instead of a mechanic. And they can immediately say back how far away they are. It tells how far away they are. It has, you know, GPS. And they can tell whether they can respond or not. It says what kind of emergency it is. And, yeah, you don't have to call the police, who might show up and shoot you or pretty much all. I mean, I guess there's good cops, but the good cops are the ones. Really, I think the only good cops are the ones that try to arrest or, you know, like the ones that report the cops who are doing things like beating up drug dealers or beating up people and planting drugs on them because they don't like them. Like, there are cops who report them. I think that's the only really good cops. And those cops don't stay cops long. They end up, you know, getting threats from other cops and then get, you know, paid to retire quickly or something. Early partial pension. But yeah, so Cell 411 is good. It's free. Get it at getcell411.com or on the App Store for your favorite chromed robot turd, either an iPhone or an Android phone. Phil, how are you liking your Android phone now that I brainwashed you into leaving the Borg of iPhones?
I'm really happy with it. I love the feature. I can take out my stylus and I can write notes on it, so I don't have to write on my body anymore.
I write on my body.
Figure out.
I write on my left, well, you know, back of my left hand.
It works for you, right?
It does. It's my notepad. You know, I had this friend who's now a Wall Street attorney, who was a guy I liked hanging out with and playing music with when I was about 17, who said that, he said, you know what's going to, I was chain smoking like I did for 30 years. I don't now because I'm on oxygen and have to not smoke, but he was, I'm on oxygen at night mostly. So
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
I always wrote on my hand, and he thought it was really amusing. And he said, you know what? I'll bet it's going to be ironic. You're going to like chain smoke for 30 years and then die of skin cancer from writing on your hand.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Thanks, guy. But
no, I love it, man. It was a big learning curve, and I'm still trying to figure some things out. But yeah. The camera on that is amazing. That was
what do you have? Big. You have the one that doesn't blow up, the one after that, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Samsung 9,
yeah, the 8,
Galaxy.
Yeah, the 8. Yeah.
Oh, the 7 was the one that blew up, right?
Right. That was the one that see people just smoke pouring out of their back pocket and freaking out. And stuff.
Yeah.
But no, I mean every phone has its issues, but. No, I'm happy with it. I'm happy.
Cool.
With it. So plus, I can have the JIT prod.
JIT prod.
The JIT prob
at app. The app. Yeah.
App.
JIT Prod, Jip Prod, Jip Productions is Phil's poetry gang in Maine, and I'm the webmaster and an affiliate member. You know, maybe I don't have the patch of the gang, but I'm maybe do I? Am I in the gang?
Oh, you do. You
I'm in the gang.
Man.
I'm being modest, yeah. But yeah, it's me and him and a few other people, Chandler St. Pierre, and some guys up in Maine. And yeah,
more man. By the day.
More by the day. Jipprod.org. That's Jip, like I've been jipped. Prod, like what they stick you with, what the police stick you with to get you moving. They
at
prod
the sheep
you
factory.
At the sheep factory. Yeah.
Right.
So the sheep factory. Randy, what were we talking about? We're out on a limb here of wormholes. Reel us back. What was before Cell 411?
Before Cell 411.
Cell 411, yeah.
Phil was telling us about the situation with the kids in the schools and how they have no flexibility or anything to meet their needs, but had to do everything, you know.
Yeah.
With the cookie,
oh, I said,
cookie cutter
model,
you know.
Which I know where I took the left turn or the right turn. It was where I was talking about how I learned in private school responsibility, which is really weird because the private school was basically the same model. What they call is it the Prussian model, Phil? Where you sit
yeah,
in a
I'm
row.
Not familiar with that.
I think
you
that's right.
You should Google that. The Prussian model is the, you know, preparing people for factories in war that is still used today a lot.
It works, too.
Yeah, it works to train you to be a soldier or work at a factory. And the thing is, like, you know, factories aren't really going to exist in America pretty soon. And if they are, they're going to be run by robots. And the people with jobs are going to be, you know, the factory is going to be two people. It's going to be the guy who programs the robots. And it's going to be the best worker at the factory who knew all the machines, and he's going to get to work there past laying off everyone long enough to teach the guy who programs the robots to do all the jobs, and then they'll can him. And then,
yeah, that's happening in Maine all over the place with these big lumber mills. They're all shut down because for that very reason, they either can't afford to, you know, modernize or
robots.
Literally, I took a tour of one up in this place called Lincoln, Maine, and I didn't see any people. I did not see any people, not even in the office. It was really, really weird. And then shortly after, the place shut down, and basically they're just scrapping all the machinery
for more machinery for robot.
Yeah, someone else. Yeah.
And it's it makes sense for manual labor that's repetitive because robots show up on time. They don't ever leave the factory. They can work two or three shifts. They don't get injured and, you know, need extensive payment while they're recovering. They don't get addicted to Oxycontin while they, you know, recover from dropping something on their foot. You know, you don't have to pay them a pension. You just recycle them. And, you know, I think it's happening in, like, the lowest skill jobs first, but it's going to move up to higher skill jobs. Like it's, you know, there's a company that's amazing. That's that their business plan is like, boy, this is ingenious. There's a company in the Midwest somewhere that makes industrial robots that are basically arms. That's all they are. They're an arm with a grasping hand. They can, like, you know, take and recognize one widget, you know, with an optical recognition, can recognize this widget and then put it in this box or put it in this hole. Like, really simple stuff that they do pay people to do. You know, they pay them more than minimum wage a lot of places because they have to get people who will show up. It's kind of interesting. And and they're basically renting these robots for the same price per hour that they're paying their workers. Like, whatever that company is paying the workers, you know, if it's $15 an hour, they'll rent you the robot for $15 an hour for 6 months to try it out.
No health benefits.
No health benefits.
No 401k.
Not hungover. Yeah. Not complaining.
The robot you want to invent would be the one, like you said, it would have to be able to see what it was doing. But if
that's
it was
trivial.
Smart enough
that's
and had
trivial.
The arms, it would need to be able to, you would bring it in, point it at one guy on the assembly line,
and it would watch him
for a while, and then take his job. Mm-hmm.
Or watch him from a camera on the ceiling so he doesn't even know he's being watched. Yeah, because if he knows he's being replaced by the robot, he might start doing things wrong, you know?
But
a lot of times, too, they do have robots that are on a line with people. Like, say they have eight people on an assembly line that are all doing the same thing. You know, they'll bring in two robots. Can you imagine the psychological effect of that, of like a robot next to you doing your job, replacing, you know, like say you had a buddy who was working there a few years, you've been working there longer, he had a lot of problems, always had to take time off for this or that or this and that, and one day you show up and just there's a robot where your friend was. Like, that's maddening. Have you guys seen the show Humans, the sci-fi show? It's amazing.
I haven't watched it, no.
It's amazing. It's a BBC show. I highly recommend it. It's one of my favorite shows. It's in its, I don't know, third season now, I think. And it's basically about not too distant future, which has always been my, like, my favorite shows have always been, like, I don't like things that take place, you know, 50,000 years from now and advanced technology and, you know, traveling to the stars. I like it shows that take, and that have magic. I like shows that don't have magic, take place in the not too distant future, and like basically look like now with a few differences, you know, like I can insert my mind into it. Like, I can see how that would be if I were there, which is important to understanding a story and liking it, is picturing yourself in it or being able to be in that world. And that show and Black Mirror are amazing. And they both look like, I mean, they say they take place in a parallel present, but I think it could also be like 5 to 10 years in the future. Like, everything looks the same. There are not flying cars. You know, everyone's got a cell phone, but like the cell phone, basically the, in one of them, like the social networks have advanced to the point where like how many likes you have on the social network isn't just, oh, I have lots of likes. It's connected to like whether you can rent a car, whether you can get a good job. And that's actually happening in China. Do you guys know about this? Like, China has a, it's kind of like a credit score,
like a credit
but
rating.
It's a credit score combined with like, you know, how good of a citizen you are score. And it actually affects your ability to like get a better job, rent a house, get credit. Yeah, it's scary, man. That is really scary.
Would people get to downvote you and that's
The
dirtbag index.
Yeah, like there's like, you know, like you only get invited to a wedding if you have a score above 7 or something. And, you know, you like there's the one episode I'm thinking of. It's the first one in the last season, I think. And it's like a lady who, it's this world and she's really trying hard to move up, and she's kind of moved up. She's kind of like a little like upper middle class, not of money, but of money, but also of like, you know, likability in society. And she does this cascading number of things that bring her score down and down and down. And like, you know, she's going to this wedding and she's at her transfer flight. And they're like while she's on the plane, she does something that like people around her vote her down. And when she gets off the plane, like they won't let her get on the connecting flight to get to this wedding. And it's someone she went to high school with, and she's trying to get to the wedding because being seen at this wedding will raise her score. So she goes to rent a car and like, you know, gets in an argument with the rental guy, and all of a sudden like he rates her and her rating goes down to the point where like none of the rental cars there will rent her a car. So she like hitchhikes to the place a couple miles away that'll rent her a car, and the cars there look like, you know, Yugos or something from like East Europe, you know, from the 60s. They're horrible cars, right. And she rents one of those, and then it's like all the controls are in, you know, Lithuanian or something, and she can't set it to English. And yeah, so that's the end result of central planning if you're lucky. I mean, the worst result of central planning is Nazi Germany, North Korea, you know, Soviet Russia during the war, you know, where people are starving because they're not the liked class. But I don't like central planning, and I think that there can be there are not one size fits all features for everything. And I think that like you do, Phil, don't you help with homeschooling through the school for people in the state that are physically like either you know, they're injured or something, or disabled and can't, differently abled and can't get to the school, or too far rural to where in the winter they can't get there. How's that work? And are there different plans, and is it more customized than sitting in the classroom in the same school?
Oh, it's totally customizable.
Nice.
It wasn't a homeschool person, but just to give you an idea about how far away things are here, we had a person hitchhike from Jonesport, Maine, which is about, I don't know, about 90 miles away every day. And she was on time. She was not late during any kind of weather event. She hitchhiked like 90 miles to school. Oh yeah. When I say every day, I meant 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. She did it. She did it. So it can be done.
Kids. And then there's probably kids that have a bus that stops in front of their house that didn't make it every day.
Well, literally, there was a kid who lived next door to the school that, and that's how it went. But
next door?
Literally next door across the driveway.
Yank him out.
He wasn't always on time.
No, he actually, there was a trail that he made between the school and his house, and he still was late.
A trail from walking for years, you mean?
Yeah.
Been going to high school for 6 years.
Wow. Well, it's a pretty common thing, actually. But getting back to the homeschool thing, it's pretty fascinating because my experience with homeschool students is they're very well prepared. And a lot of the times what their parents will do is when they're thinking about applying to colleges, they need a credential. So one of the ways to get a credential is to take the standardized, the HISET test, which is a nationally recognized test. And so
is that the new what it used to be called? GPA, GA?
The GED. So the thing is, like, different states had the option of still sticking with the GED, going with the HISET, or there's another company out there that does all that testing and stuff. But the homeschool thing is very popular around here, and a lot of it's because people are just really they lost their faith in the public education, really, and that's what it really comes down to. And I think a lot of it is because when there were services in place that were working, now there aren't because of budget cuts. We've had some pretty severe budget cuts here, and Maine, there's I think less than 1.5 million people, and it's a big state, and all our tax money goes to keeping the roads together.
Were they really working, though? I mean, in the 70s, like Westfield School, where I went, and you were from three towns over, but you went to Westfield and worked for your uncle there, your grandpa, in his store that sold dynamite to my dad.
That's right, man.
That's because I got to explain that because I'm going to get a knock at my door for saying that. So my dad was a farmer in Sherman, New York, one town over from Westfield. And when they'd be clearing a field and have to remove a stump, they would use dynamite. And you could go buy it back then. I mean, he wouldn't sell it to a kid, and he probably wouldn't sell it to a stranger, would he?
No, he wouldn't.
Yeah, but
if he knew who you were and what you were using it for, sure.
Yep. Yeah. So Westfield, you know it well. That school was good. You know, I don't know what the ratings were or whatever, but I know that it was considered a good school compared to a lot of inner city schools, but compared even to other schools in the county or, in the state.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
And it was, I didn't learn much there. And here's why I think that homeschoolers are more attentive and more prepared is because they don't have to waste the time with the school reaching down to the slower students around them and the students that don't want to learn. So
no, they don't. And their parents care enough to take them out of the big school.
I mean, I would say I learned a few things in school, but not a lot. I mean, my mother, I actually could read before I went to kindergarten. My mother taught me to read, and I picked up a Dick and Jane book the first day of school and started reading it to the teacher. And the teacher was like, "You could read. Wow, get up in front of the class and read that." And I did, and it was a mistake because I was bullied for being too smart and being a smart butt, as they said. So that's what you're up against. That's what the homeschooler doesn't have to deal with, is the kids that want to beat him up because he's smart, And then like I would say, in a 6 hour day or seven period day, 6 hour day at school, I would say probably an hour and a half of that was of use to me. Not only in later life, but even at the time, I could have been taught that in an hour and a half a day too, but having to sit through like half the class. And now I hear like half the class is agenda, here's why you should hate the president, some political agenda of some teacher being inserted, we're going to go protest and you're going to get credit for it. And it's like the teacher chooses what you're protesting, which is ridiculous. I could see giving school credit for protesting, but the kids should be able to protest what they want. And I think that a lot of those teachers would not give credit for protesting something that they like.
So can I segue into that?
Yeah, go ahead.
I did that. Okay, I did that. So I had a group of 11th graders, and they got to pick a decade of history to study, and it happened to be the 60s. So what we did was we looked at all the you know, the most popular issues of the day. They got to pick one of those issues. We put on a full protest, which meant that we made our protest signs. I called the office. We marched all the way through the school, the same school that this latest school threat thing happened. We marched out at the back of the school, walked up to the top of the hill where the water tower was, and then we had a rally, right? So keep in mind, most of these students had been in trouble with the law and didn't really have a good opinion about the police in general. So here we are. We're having our rally. Everything was going great. They were really getting into it. And a police car pulls up. And we're like way out in the back of the school. So all I can think of is a teacher saw what we were doing and called the cops on us. So the
were you
cop
on school property?
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. The cop came up. He drove right through our crowd, gave us a good stare, turned around, and left.
Wow.
And I said, now you know what it felt like.
Okay, you're a good
and
teacher.
I said, man.
They probably thought you told the cop to do it. That's so like coincidental.
Honest to God, you know? I couldn't have made it up. But you know, like it was like an accident waiting to happen too, because I saw the car. There's no other place it could have been going. And I said, all right, this is the test right here. If you guys can keep it cool, you're good to go. And literally that was my test for the class. But if you know,
awesome.
If my principal called me in, I probably would have gotten in trouble for that. But It was you know, making a point and involving people and giving them choices once again.
That's great, man. That is really cool, and I dig that. And that's not something a lot of teachers would do. You know, there's a Simpsons where Lisa is like, but wait, we could be learning in a more effective way. And you see the teacher pushing this button that looks like an old-fashioned doorbell under her desk. It's a silent alarm. And in the principal's office, you see this thing flashing on the wall that says independent thought alarm. And then later right. in the day, like it happens again with someone else. And he's like, two independent thoughts alarms in one day. That's a record.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
So Randy, thoughts?
Yes, sir.
Thoughts and prayers.
I think that's great stuff Phil's doing. If you have to be, you know, inside the monster,
the maw,
right. as he is, at least you can do some good while you're there. You know, that's, I mean, I was not inside in the same way, but you know, you had things when you were a prosecutor where you, if you put your foot down short of getting fired, you actually can do some good things.
Right.
And, as long as you're there, you should.
So does your book reflect that kind of thinking or?
Well,
tell me a little bit more about it.
It's two books.
I do have. Well, there's one book on a libertarian issue, but when I started, when I
what's
began
it called?
To, it's called "Free is Beautiful."
You know why and Catholics should be liberty? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's the subtitle, and the reason that I wrote it is that I'm a Catholic, and
I was mumbling. What's the subtitle?
Oh, why Catholics should be libertarian.
Yep.
Is the subtitle.
Yeah.
And as I was really getting deeply into libertarianism and realizing that, hey, this is what I am, I thought, well, I had some people telling me. I didn't see any problem with being a Catholic and a libertarian, but I had people tell me that I had a problem. So I started digging into it deeper and deeper. And I'm first of all, I'm looking to see if a Catholic can be a libertarian. And, of course, the title of the book is Why They Should Be. And I got to the point where I realized that so many of any all mainline Christianity is a bit off a track in their state licking. And so the whole book was written for the purpose of fellow Catholics to realize that not only can you not like the state and be a libertarian, but perhaps you should be, and that's my whole thesis in the thing. And I have, you know, I'm totally convinced. I don't think there's a question about it. It's kind of one of those things that is kind of a developmental thing where Western civilization, it took them a long time to get rid of, say, slavery. Yeah. Another thing it took a real long time was the idea that, say, most of the people, the people in this town are one religion, that mm-hmm. It took a long time to find out that you didn't have to kill the people on the other side of the town if they weren't the same religion. They figured that there was a lot of bloodshed to figure that out, you know, through the Reformation. And now they've reached a point, most of the Christian churches accept that there are other ones, and they don't, even if they disagree, they do not have to kill each other.
Oh, that was slavery going on in America until the 1700s, when the Reformation ended.
Oh, even after.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it still goes on. People are anti-this and anti-that, but if they just stop killing each other, that's the big step.
No, I mean killing each other. Like, Puritans killed people or enslaved people for being
they were brutal.
Very slightly different brands of Christianity.
Right.
Well, but they really were hard on the witches.
The witch thing was a whole, that's a whole podcast right there, and Ben's already done it. But, hey, you know, speaking of, I want to interject a little thing here. We can go back to this, but before I forget, speaking of central planning, you know, I have a 7-year plan for Phil. He doesn't know it yet.
That's news to me.
Yeah, it's a 5-year plan, but I've centrally planned what's going to happen to you after 7 years. So you're going to retire, your wife's going to retire, and you're going to move to Wyoming and buy the house across the street from DJ and I.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's like perpetually for sale. Like, in the 10 years we've lived here, like, somebody,
but it's a good one.
It's a great house. It's the same floor plan as ours. So it's, yeah, I'm even centrally planning your floor plan. And and it's always for sale. You know, it's like it people rent it for a year, and then, you know, they're the kind of people that can't show up, so they move on. I mean, they're not, no bad neighbors, but just like kind of, you know, neighbors that can't keep a house. So then someone else, they have it on sale for like a year, and then they rent it again because they don't sell it. So yeah, but it's a good house. It's just, you know, there's a buyer's market. No one wants to live across from me because my brain waves will make them hurt and won't be able to sleep. Because anyway, so that's my plan. You don't have to agree, but just it's planned. It's there for you if you want it. That plan.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, Catholics.
Yeah, well, so what, you know.
Can you tell me about your other book? Is this one that you're working on currently?
No. What I'm doing is I'm taking the book that I had, the book Free is Beautiful, Why Catholics Should Be Libertarian. I wrote that in 2011. It came out in 2012. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been getting so much more material, and there's been a lot of objections and criticisms, mostly from the left, but some from the right, about the book, and I'm going to answer those, and I'm doing a big revision and expansion. Like, the book was only, it was a small book, it was 150 pages. It's going to be 250 the second time out, because it reaches that stuff. And it also goes to some of the, I kind of glossed over some of the really hardest material to get around. Like, I'm sure you guys have both, you know, you've heard the words of the letter of Paul in Romans 13.
About the government?
Where it sounds super, super statist and everything.
What, the one about, what's the quote exactly? Because everyone quotes that when they say you should pay your taxes. That one?
Well, yeah. Oh, it says pay taxes if taxes are due. Give honor if honor is due. Respect if respect is due. He's talking about the state. You know, and of course, my immediately reaction, you know, I was in court one time where some guy got up and he was in some argument. He's a real smarmy lawyer from St. Louis or something that he's full of himself. And he goes, and the judge, of course, he's a country boy, too, out here in mid-state. And so the guy gets up and goes, well, Your Honor, with all due respect, that judge, you know, sort of figuratively slapped him across the room and into the back wall, because he knew to say giving you due respect means you got none coming and getting none from me. And after seeing something like that, I read something like give honor to whom honor is due. And I just laugh, and I said, he's insulting the emperor, not saying, you know, kisses behind.
Yeah. Paul is saying that, or this client was saying that?
No. Well, the client was insulting the judge. Paul is insulting the government.
Explain.
When he says it. Well, when you say you need to give them all the honor that they're due, meaning the leaders. Well, when you say you give them all the honor is due, that's kind of like Jesus saying, well, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. Well, Caesar thinks you're saying pay your taxes, but Jesus is saying everything belongs to God. Caesar get nothing.
Yeah.
And the people understood that meant Caesar gets nothing. But Caesar, he's so proud and stupid, he thinks Jesus is saying, pay your taxes. And there's 100 things like that in the New Testament that shows that these guys were very subversive. St. Paul, when the last letter that he wrote, he was in prison in Rome, and he's writing to a young friend of his, and he's talking. He makes a reference about how he has fought the good fight. He has run the race. I paid. I followed all of the rules, and now I'm going to get the crown. He says, and this as it's written, it doesn't. It's kind of like flowery language, and big deal. Okay, I get it. You're about to die, and you lived well. But if you put it in the context of the fact that Nero, Caesar, had just gotten back from Greece, where he went there, this proud peacock, buffoon of an emperor, he thought he was a great entertainer, musician, singer, and he'd done a concert tour through all of Greece at the time of the Olympic Games, and he had ridden in the four-horse chariot race with his chariot had 10 horses, and they went around a couple times, and he fell out of his chariot, and they stopped the race and brought him back out and put him back up into it and dusted him off.
About that another time, but...
Okay, I'm rolling. What'd you say there, Phil? Say it again. I liked it.
Okay. I just said I'd really like to hear more about Randy's books and do whatever we can to support him. And
Fiend Phone. Fiend Phone.
Oh, I'm back.
Yeah. We're just saying nice things about you and about the Fiends. Oh, but,
So well, I got rolling. Kicked off. That wasn't very nice.
We're live.
Do it all right.
Live. You're
Everyone's
back.
Doing live.
Yeah.
So, Randy.
Yes, sir.
Redemption there?
I am here.
Yeah.
And, when you get thrown off the air by the computer, you
by
start
the government.
Thrashing
that was the
around.
Government. It had to be.
Oh, was it? Well, you start thrashing around. You know, first, did I do something wrong? Did they do something wrong? Did the computer go down? Then you take. Well, I'm gonna disconnect and shut down Fiend Phone, bring it back up. You know, and all of this. But whatever happens, by the time you get back on the air, you can't remember at all what you were talking about when you got thrown off.
Yeah,
and that applies right now. If I was in the courtroom, I would ask the court reporter to play back the last thing that I said, read back the last thing that I said. And you probably can't do that, can you, Michael?
Not easily. I'd have to, yeah.
Then everyone would have to hear it twice. And that's too much.
Yeah.
Well, I was
Nero.
Going to.
You're excited. You're talking about Nero. Or was that before?
Well, I think we were talking about Nero earlier, and he was really a bad guy.
And history paints him as just kind of like this comical guy who fiddled while things burned. Like, oh, he's so zany. No,
well, it would be comical if he hadn't killed so many people.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
he was a brutal guy,
kind
and
like Mao.
And, he anybody who was any kind of an opponent of his, of course, they died. And people still think that he probably was responsible for the fire in Rome. At least some are. Mm-hmm. Not that he necessarily fiddled as it burned. But, I think he was a sick enough puppy to have done that.
And you think about the people that enabled him. And the whole thing that was going through my mind when you were relating that story was, you know, where's the authentic feedback and how much of a difference would have that made in this whole thing, right? If everyone just got up and walked out of the Colosseum after he wrecked his chariot the first time and laughed at him and threw their tickets up in the air and discussed, think the outcome could have been totally different, you know?
You know, and though, could it really, though? Who would do it? Because they would be lucky if they weren't executed on the spot.
Right. So,
I mean, it wasn't even like today where the government, you know, they could come after you. But then it was you could be killed instantly. The emperor, you know, was, you know, a god or something like this. Right. And, and they were absolute dictators. The Roman Senate had no power, you know, just nothing. The senators were just a bunch of sycophants who, vied to see who could stay in the good favor of the emperor and make money from it, which, of course, what our senators do now.
Our
at least
senators.
They don't run around.
Oh, that's right. You're paying for them, so they're yours.
No, Well, no, I deserve to be corrected on that. I wouldn't want to claim any of them, not even the ones in my state. No, politicians
my state,
are the most.
Do you own a state? Sorry, go ahead, Bear. Go ahead.
The state that I live in, yes, yeah. Yes. You see how I've got myself so turned around because I, you know, had my thoughts interrupted by the technology. And I can't use that forever, but, you know, I think we're getting near the end of our show.
Yeah.
So I will use it from now until the end of it and then promise to set that aside until the next turmoil ensues. The technical... wardrobe malfunction.
Audio wardrobe malfunction.
yes. And it doesn't show anything that's obscene, but it's embarrassing.
It implies it. Yeah.
It's embarrassing. Yeah. So I'm sure I'm glad I don't, you know, didn't live around, you know, back in those days. That would have been pretty terrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, they didn't have Uber. And right. That stuff.
Hygiene was terrible. I don't know if I could have dealt with that.
Yeah, it's time for my annual bath.
Yeah.
Well, no, the Romans had baths, didn't they?
They were
for sinning.
They cleaned them.
Sinning. Yeah.
And vomitoriums,
that was pretty cool, I guess.
You mean for after you ate too much?
We gotta use that. After you glutton, so you can eat more. Yeah, we gotta put that in a poem. Yeah. That's a good image there, Phil.
Yeah, I just picture the little skinny guy at the door handing out feathers.
Handing out feathers?
Yeah,
you just make you throw up.
Feather down the throat, and there you go.
Yeah, while the poor people just had to use their finger. Oh, no, they didn't want to throw up anyway.
They didn't have enough to eat anyway.
Yeah.
So you guys have a poem in progress now?
Yep. Yep.
We always have a poem in progress.
And it will be incorporated into the next...
Chip.
Well, Chip, I don't know, what do you production. Call it? Is it a song? Bit is it a song or is it a song. Poem?
It's
or is
a song.
It both?
It's a poem
both.
And a song.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, songs are usually poems anyway. But if
there's generally a difference between lyrics and poems. But we're blurring that difference, but not in the way
Pop
Dylan
did. Blurring
different way. Yeah, I mean, blurring, you know, like one of the greatest rock songs of all time, the lyrics are, you know, you need schooling, I ain't fooling, I'm going to send you back to school, way down inside, woman, you need it, you need my love, whole lot of love.
Led Zeppelin.
That's not a very good poem, but it's a great lyric for a great song.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's the timing. You know, it's the timing.
But a lot of poetry set to music is either, like, really wimpy, like, I gave my love a cherry kind of stuff, or it doesn't really fit. Like for instance, the album, the posthumous Doors album, where they took some drunken poetry that Jim Morrison had recorded, and the remaining three Doors kind of improvised bad jazz over it in the studio, it doesn't really fit at all.
Right.
They couldn't or wouldn't really work on it. Whereas the stuff that we're doing, the music and the poetry is conceived, not simultaneously, but with each other in mind. And the poetry is used in a musical way that really fits the music. And the music is written for the poem often. So, yeah, it's different. We got to wrap it up here, guys. Any closing arguments here, Prosecutor?
Closing arguments. You know, I think I'm ready to rest my case.
All right. And Phil?
I second that.
I second that emotion. All right.
Yeah.
I submit this meeting to the court of public opinion.
All right. Thanks, guys.
The 6th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, from Thursday, June 21st through Monday, June 25th. There will be all sorts of activities in a family and adult-friendly environment. Scheduled speakers include Dana Martin, Brett Vanat, Prof. CJ, and Scott Horton. Round up your friends and family members and get them registered today at mplfest.org. That's Mike, Papa, Lima, Fest.org. Dogs welcome, longer leashes recommended.